My name is Ino Teresca. I'm at Microsoft Research in Cambridge, and this is joint work with a whole bunch of other colleagues, Phil and Richard, also in Cambridge. It's titled Multi-Structured Redundancy, so I'll start with a little bit of motivation. So to start with the motivation, we have just been observing over the last couple of years that we have multiple abstractions in our storage systems that we're building inside Microsoft. And all these abstractions are built upon multiple layers. One of the first layers is obviously the language layer. So you have things like put and get. Many of you would associate that with a key value store, but there is no reason to. There is things like create, read, and write. Then there are things like add node, add edge, get neighbors, usually associated with the graph store. Then you also have things like SQL, which is usually associated with the database. Although recently I've actually been using SQL to mine some text files as well, which just goes to show that this is the language layer. Then there is the other layer, the transactions consistency atomicity layer. You have multiple options here as well. Different types of consistency, for example, atomicity, transactions or no transactions, so on and so forth. The other layer has to do with performance, caching, and prefetching. Multiple choices here as well. So some systems might use LRU, some of them might use MRU. Some of them have a better shot at doing hint-guided prefetching because you might have a higher level structure you're working with, like a graph. And then there is the final layer, the layout on the persistent store, or with some of these new systems, which are all in memory, layout in memory. So things like log structured, B-trees, row stores, column stores, and matrix. Now I'm gonna try drawing on the slide, so this, just bear with me for a second. Pointer options, pen. Okay, so now one of the problems that we have realized is that we have picked upon some of these points here. So for example, create, read, and write, okay? Something like this. And then we call this part a file, okay? So for a long time, we have optimized file systems to basically cater to these different points that I just randomly picked inside the screen. So it's very common, for example, for files to have this API, this grammar, that says create, read, and write. And then recently, we have things like key value stores that I've picked on some other things, like put and get. It's usually implied that you don't have any transactions with key value stores and no caching, and they're usually stored in a log structured way, okay? So this is a key value store. Now, as you can see here, there are many other points left kind of aside, and we have picked a couple of, sometimes arbitrary, sometimes not, sometimes quite thoughtful. So for example, the reason we have picked the log structured layout for a key value store is because the implication is that the values we are storing are going to be small in size. So log structured layout can actually easily cater to those things. But one thing that we're realizing over the years, and this is very much a workshop talk, I won't have the answers for many of the questions here, but one thing that we're realizing is that we're, in the past we have over-optimized things like file systems, and we're noticing that we're also over-optimizing things like key-value stores recently as well. Lots of publications being done right now on how to tweak the last bit out of the log-structured layout or the in-memory footprint of a key-value store, and maybe we'll do it in the future with things like graph stores as well. And one of the things we're seeing is, what if these assumptions we made whenever we picked these data structures actually don't hold true over time? So for example, what if the value in the key value store just grows over time? So you would have been better off storing that value in a file system. Or what if relations are desired among items in a key value store? Well, you would have probably been better off storing that in a graph system, okay? Very interestingly, if you look at some of the products for some of the major companies like Facebook, if you really read carefully between the lines, I'm sure there are some Facebook people here as well, but the Haystack paper, for example, had this very interesting sentence that says, the Facebook photo store is designed for scenarios where data is written once, read often, and is never modified. Well, what if tomorrow you want to support applications like Photoshop, which might actually want to run on Facebook servers and want to modify the data? Do you really have to re-architect the whole system just because you have made such decisions that have led to your current architecture? So we believe that workloads are too complex for a single abstraction like that. So this kind of cartoonish figure here illustrates a particular workload that over time might be better off using different data structures to access the data. A little bit of kind of common sense evidence before I show some of the more real evidence is that, for example, a home user might upload 100 photos during the day, might later sort the photos, tag them, and then browse them. So to absorb the photos, you might want a key value store during the day, but then later on when you want to sort them or tag them and browse them, you might be better off viewing them through a graph kind of interface and a graph system end to end, okay? A typical example in the database community, a small business processes transactions during the day and then might want to do some data mining at night. It's rarely the case that they're actually going to use the same data structure for both of these activities. So there is some real evidence out there, which is really interesting to see. It's kind of small, though, and most of it comes from the database community. So this is real evidence that multiple abstractions might actually be needed. So if you look at SQL Server, and this is the only database I looked at, I'm sure other ones like Oracle's one might also have such a thing. But SQL Server from 2008 onwards has this really interesting thing called file stream. So if you use the file stream option with SQL Server, some of the blobs that you are actually storing in SQL Server are actually stored in the file system. And the guidelines are such that if you look at the guidelines, it says, if your blob size is larger than 1 megabyte and it's read mostly, and it's streaming reads, then you're better off storing it actually in the file system. So this is really interesting. For the first time, databases and the file system, so SQL Server and NTFS, are actually collaborating with one another. Usually they don't really like to talk to one another. They want to reinvent the wheel multiple times. Okay. Other work, also in the database community in 2002, presented in VLDB, and I know it's been productized as well, is this idea that you might want to have column stores and row stores coexist inside the same system. Okay, many of you know what these are, but it's just slightly different arrangement of how the data is laid out for different kinds of workloads. Okay, so there is real evidence out there in real products that says that you might want multiple abstractions coexisting in the system. Other related work that tries to kind of blur the boundaries. One interesting paper recently, I didn't have time to cite this because I only read this after writing the paper, was this TableFS work at CMU. What they did is that they actually put a database, a key value store, inside the file system, so all small writes would actually go to the key value store and all large things would actually go inside the file system. So very similar with this file stream approach that SQL Server has. Swissbox is this effort at ETH in Zurich. What they are trying to do is that they have put, it's a different kind of blending of abstractions. So they have put the Barrelfish operating system as the basic building block of a database. So we're seeing this boundaries between the database and the operating system also get blurred in that respect. And then there are other works like Boxwood, for example, that provided distributed data structures like a B-tree. What we want is that we want multiple of these data structures to actually coexist in the same system. Interestingly, we had the WinFS attempt at Microsoft as well many years before I actually joined Microsoft. There, it was this push to move from the file abstraction to the database abstraction. Now, even if that had succeeded, it failed for various reasons, which most of them are not actually technical, but even if it had succeeded, it's interesting that it would have just been one abstraction. It wouldn't have been perhaps it wouldn't have been enough just because people do like to use multiple abstractions, as some of this real evidence shows. So the research agenda, basically, that we've been pursuing over the last couple of months, and we're intending to pursue later on, and the agenda I'd like to get some feedback from you guys on, is to investigate how multiple data structures abstractions can actually coexist inside the same system. And there have been two simultaneous paths that we've taken. One of them has been at the data center scale. So we're building a storage system to cater at this particular scale. And the other one is very different. The other one is a file system for a single device, like a laptop, a smartphone, or a tablet. And we'll see what the commonalities are between the two. So I'll start with the data center approach. So the approach we have taken there, the key idea is to use the existing redundancy inside the data center. So we are already replicating the data multiple times, n times, okay? Why not keep each of the replicas slightly differently so that you can, in fact, have n data structures kind of coexist inside the system? So it's still the same data being stored, it's just you're storing it differently, so perhaps you're storing it, one copy as a key value store, one copy as a graph store, one copy as a file. I'll get into some details. There are several analogies here in programming languages, especially. So for example, in your programs, often you have things like a sorted linked list and a hash table. Now, often you have these structures actually on the same data, okay? What we're trying to do here with this work is that we're saying that you want a sorted linked list and a hash table kind of simultaneously storing, two copies of the data, if you will. Then there's always the N-way programming, which is often used for reliability in some of these programming languages. So the three data structures we're investigating, even that most of the time we're actually replicating the data three times, are things like a key value store, a file store, and a graph store. So we have some full-time developers. I'm a researcher, I can code, but they are better than me in developing real stuff, that are using some of these APIs. So the APIs themselves haven't really changed, so we're giving them three sets of APIs, a key value API, a file API, and a graph API, and we're kind of like letting them loose. We're not telling them what the system is really doing with these things. So it's very likely that if somebody is using the put and get API, so if somebody says put, I might actually choose, or rather the system might actually choose to store the value as a file, okay? But we're just letting them program with this, and they are giving us some feedback. We are giving them some feedback as well. So I'll just give here a simple example. So this is inside the data center. So you have three different racks here, okay, with three different switches. And basically here is the idea that you have stored the data already three times. Why don't you store it slightly differently in each of the replicas, okay? So I'll just give an example here by drawing again. Is it selected? Yes. So the example here is, for example, that if you are doing streaming reads, where is the file? So streaming reads might actually just read the data from this particular set of machines, okay? Whereas if you're doing things like find me the nearest neighbors, if your data is actually related to other data, okay, so any graph kind of processing could actually be serviced from a different set of nodes, okay? Now, you're quickly seeing here that the two examples I gave you, find the nearest neighbors and also stream data, are all examples that have to do with reads, okay? One of the thorny issues with this is how do you actually handle writes and how do you actually handle updates? So one thing that you can do is if your values are small writes, you can first send them to the key value store, but because the system has to eventually be consistent, you have to also propagate them to the other layers as well. So eventually you have to store this data in as a file and also as a graph as well at the same time, okay? Now, this is not just about dealing with small or large requests, reads and writes. There are also some other factors at play here. So for example, if locality is also a big factor, okay? So for example, if you have a graph like this, okay, where these are nodes, this could be video files, it could be anything, right? The way you would actually store this on the graph store, okay, you might actually choose to preserve the locality, so you store all three nodes on one of the servers, and the other one on the other one, that's fine. Now you have to store this structure also on the key value part of the system, and usually the way you do that is you don't actually preserve locality in that particular case. You actually want to uniformly spread the data around so that you can have good load balancing for those kinds of queries that don't need the locality. So you might actually store it as one node in each of these things, okay? So locality of your accesses will also matter whenever you actually do this this kind of storing there. So these are just some examples to give you a feel for how this might actually work. So it's still the same amount of data, it's just stored with different locality and slightly differently. So what are the building blocks we have inside the system? We're by no means done yet, but where we have started is we had a couple of building blocks developed in the Everest and Sierra works. In particular, at the server level, we had already this capability to have variable length chunks in our distributed storage system. We have this really powerful abstraction called the distributed log, and this is a log which is spread across all the servers inside our system. This diagram here shows how the log is spread across all the computers. So basically every server in our system exports a little bit of storage space to this distributed log abstraction inside the system. And we believe that this log will actually be useful to absorb all the updates very fast. And then for the read part of the workload, we can redistribute the data with the right layout. We have a primary-based concurrency control in place, which basically means that the data is initially received by a primary, and then the primary stores it passes the control to store it to the three different data structures. What's missing right now is the caching and prefetching building blocks and transactions inside the system. Those we don't have. We have, I can't get rid of this thing now, can I? No, the eraser doesn't work. That's fine. We have a metadata service, which is quite scalable. It maintains, for files, it maintains the namespace. For the key value part of things, it maintains basically the key range, okay? And currently, very perversely, the metadata service is also storing, this is an implementation detail, but it's also storing in memory all the edges in one part of the graph structure. One copy of the graph structure is actually as part of the metadata service in memory, whereas the other two are actually stored on persistent stores. The client library provides the APIs I mentioned early, and obviously the metadata and the data are decoupled from one another, so you don't have metadata accesses on the critical path. There are several challenges here where I've just started identifying several of them by actually building applications and things on top of the system. The first one is, are N data structures sufficient? So I made a big deal about saying that you don't want just one abstraction, you want many of them to coexist. The truth is that for various graph algorithms, even just for the graph part, there is no one kind of way you lay out the data, which is best for all algorithms. So for example, if you do something like all destinations shortest paths, you might want to do matrix multiplication to actually do that. And the layout we have right now for the graph might not actually be the best for that. So the second one is, could peak performance suffer? So initially we had the data center, which was actually optimized for one kind of workload and all the resources were dedicated to it. Now we have optimized for N kinds of peaks, but perhaps not for like the Uber peak, if you will, okay? The third one is, what about performance interference? So one decision we made early on, there have been several talks in Hot Cloud and in the conference about QoS and performance interference. One decision we're making right away is that we're working only with SSDs and big memory machines and also non-volatile memory. There is quite a bit of research in the lab around these themes. And we're just bypassing this altogether because, frankly, the moment you actually put multiple data structures on the disk, is just you just can't predict the performance. You really don't know what's going to happen, and that's just a big showstopper for this kind of work.
So why isn't your second question how much rather than could?
Well, because I think that's a fair point. I think in general, peak performance will suffer, and the reality is that we're just going to have to show that for the workloads that we care about, perhaps it doesn't suffer as much. That's a very good point. That's a good point, yeah. Performance will suffer, peak performance. I mentioned this problem with updates, and this is just a simple experiment that says that speed matching of updates will actually be a big problem again, and in general, there will be some performance degradation here in play. So this is the throughput. This is just 1 kilobyte update. So these are very small writes to the system, okay? And the updates are actually absorbed using three different ways. The first one is to actually just store them in memory. Okay. The second one is to actually store them using a log structured layout. And the third one is to actually, every 1 kilobyte update creates a 1 kilobyte file in the file system. Now, the reality is that all these three will actually have to coexist in the file system. But as you can see, and these are all, the SSD in this example and the memory are all from a desktop system. So in practice, in enterprise systems, it's probably an order of magnitude higher, all of them. But the relative performance is still orders of magnitude away, in particular, two orders of magnitude different from one another. So again, the general answer here is that updates and speed matching will be a problem. Now the question is, for the workloads we care about, you know, do we have enough idle time in place to actually make sure that the system can reach a consistent state before we actually start servicing the read workloads or not? I just want to point out that we have enough metadata in the system to know where the latest version of a particular write is. So there is no correctness issue in place to a certain extent. So if somebody makes a very fast write in the in-memory copy of the system and then later on makes a read, we have enough metadata to say that go to the memory part to actually get the latest data. But you can't cheat in this kind of system. You still need to have all three copies eventually be consistent with one another. So another question is, can recovery actually be uniformly fast? And the most important question here is, and the competitor, even inside the lab, we have multiple approaches going. It could be the case that one single in-memory structure always actually does best. Okay, so there are papers out there like RAMCloud and various others, so some in NSDI and here in USENIX as well, that basically are using systems which store all the primary data in memory. So this is our main competitor to the approach that I talked about. If it is true that one copy in memory will actually be good for most of the things that you care about, then you don't actually need three of the copies, okay? You don't need any more kind of data structures on persistent store. I don't really know what the answer is. Several other people in the lab are investigating some of this, but I just want to point out that for RAMCloud in particular took a really sweet spot in there in the system. So if a system is really large, petabytes of storage and memory is going to be really expensive. So most likely you are going to need some persistent store like SSDs for your primary data. Interestingly, if your system is also very small, if you just have tens of machines, most likely you're going to use SSDs as well because you just don't have enough spindles onto which to actually to parallelize the memory writes. Okay? So RAMCloud picked a sweet spot in the middle where you had a few terabytes of memory and a couple of hundred thousand disks, okay? But there are other systems as well which we're trying to investigate for which in-memory might actually not be the answer. Having said that, we're using memory as well as much as we can. So for example, the graph edges are actually kept in memory for one of the replicas. So something quite a little bit different kind of in spirit, but very similar in that we want to have multiple data structures. We have a very good HCI group in Cambridge, and for the last couple of months, we have been doing some user studies and seeing like how people feel about possessing their data on the cloud and on their laptop. And one big complaint that we hear from people, you'll see this is very similar to the data center part. One complaint is that people are not really comfortable with storing some of their stuff online. That's one thing. They also want to store a copy of it on their laptops. And the stuff that people keep nowadays is not just files. So for example, on Facebook, it's not just the social graph, but it's their photos, their comments, they're all linked. It's like a big graph of data to a certain extent. And there is a large desire that they have a great desire to actually store some of these things on the local file system. So what we have been investigating is to actually make the local file system, which is still very old-fashioned based on NTFS. It's not really that much better on the Apple ecosystem. It's not really that much better when you just look at the local file system and the ext3, ext4. We just want to blur the lines a little bit between the local file system and the cloud. So the store, the file system, it's not in the kernel anymore, this one we've been doing. It's a variant of what I talked about, the data center one. It exports these native data structures as libraries, so a key value store, a file store, and a graph store. Obviously, as a single store on the laptop, you don't have redundancy there. You just have one hard disk or one SSD, but you can partition the resource, okay, and then have part of it be log structured, part of it be just like your normal file systems today, and part of it be like a graph store, okay? So what we're building here is a complete user-level file system. This is just a screenshot of the page. We're working with designers here, and obviously they are very much about the design and the UI of it, but one of the things that you'll notice here, for example, is that they have sets, and these sets are not implemented in the usual way using folders anymore. They're actually implemented using our graph data structure in the back end. And whenever you look at this, so we have the full system running, but not on this computer, it's on the Windows 8 Metro interface. Whenever you look at it, the lines all of a sudden between the local file system and the web are really blurred, okay? Your data might actually be residing part of it on the web, part of it locally, part of it on your computer at home. You get a really nice unified interface, and it's not NTFS anymore, or the latest file system that we have. It's just a whole bunch of libraries, a whole bunch of data structures that actually make more sense to actually store some of this data, which is not files. So in summary, we've been investigating how multiple data structures can coexist in the same system. This is very much a workshop kind of talk. We're by no means done, so I'd really like to hear your feedback. We had two simultaneous paths, the data center scale and also single laptop and tablet scale. And I'd like to thank my collaborators. This is a cross-group work in systems and networking and also in the socio-digital, which is a fancy name for HCI, but they don't like that. That's it.
Of course. questions?
Hi. So my kind of immediate thoughts are, how do you know if you covered all the fundamental data structures?
So I mentioned this as a challenge, so I'm not really sure. In fact, I know that we haven't covered many of them, even just on the graph end, because you might want to do the graph data structure. You might want to lay it out differently, depending on the algorithm that you use. So I'm not really sure if we've covered all of them, but it seems like the key value store, the graph store, and the file store are three reasonable ones to start with. Now, there is a trade-off there. The more you want to cover, the more you'll have to pay in terms of maintaining consistency among the copies. So I wouldn't be too happy if we end up supporting more than five, because the cost would be really high in that particular case. And if we do end up supporting more than five, then I surely hope to identify some ways to do some of these things differently. Maybe we don't. One thing that we struggle with is that, do we really want to store the data n times differently, or are we just saying that we just need to keep interesting indices on this data? Mm-hmm. Okay, like the graph skeleton can be kept independently from the data, but then you need to recover it if it fails, right? So we're struggling with that, and I don't really know what the right answer is.
Okay, I guess a related thing to that is, a graph data structure has this relationship between nodes, right? But the key value doesn't. So if somebody is inherently storing a graph data, do you need to rewrite your key value or some application that interacts with the underlying key value store to add all of that additional data in it?
So you're saying that couldn't the graph store just be good enough? Do you need a key value store at all?
No. So the thing is, a graph store has information on nodes as well as edges, right?
Yes.
But a key value doesn't have edges. So do you create new internal key value objects to represent edges?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. I see. So how do you store the edges? So you store the edges in the graph store as edges, but then how do you store them as files, and how do you store them in the key value store? That's a very interesting question. I didn't get too much into details. But one way we store them as files, we follow the approach of the collocated file system. So we actually append them to the file, which is a big problem, okay? Because obviously every time you add an edge, all of a sudden you need to go and seek at the end of the file and then make changes there. But that's the way we store them as files. Mm-hmm. We collocate them with the actual file itself, the node, okay? And in the key value store, we do something similar as well.
Okay, thanks.
Please state your name and affiliation when you ask the question.
Hi, Timmy Zhu from Carnegie Mellon. So you said for the data center path, you were planning on reusing some of the redundancy in the system. And so there are some systems that use erasure coding and other things to be more efficient on storage. What are your thoughts on this?
So Timmy is my intern. I gave him that question. No, I think that's an excellent question. There was a talk in Hot Cloud and ATC saying that, the Windows Azure talk, talking about erasure coding the data. I don't really have any good answer for how you deal with erasure coding here. I mean, much of the implications for what I talked about were that the data is actually replicated n times. Now, I did mention a little bit that we're struggling with this idea of, like, maybe you don't need data redundancy as such, you just need index redundancy, okay? And if that's the case, if we just need index redundancy, then I can still let the data be erasure coded. I don't need to touch that at all, okay? So there is some hope there in that the indices could just be sufficient, but by default, I haven't really thought more about erasure codes than that. The thing is that erasure codes are also used mostly for cold data, which might not actually need this kind of specialized data structures because it's, by definition, maybe not accessed as much.
And one more question on, so you had mentioned that you have some log that you might be using to quickly absorb writes and something like that, and then eventually it'll be converted into the file store or graph store, and that will take some time. So if you're wanting to access the data quickly, you still know where it is in your log store and you can still access it, but it won't be as performant and you might not be able to index things as fast. Do you think there's a fundamental trade-off between like how quickly, like how recent it is versus like access and searching?
So there is no notion. So whenever we access the data, we always access the latest version. So there is no trade-off between freshness and consistency or anything like that at all here. So we access the latest version. The problem is that we do need to eventually maintain consistency inside the system among all the different replicas. And the worry is that over time, if your workload is, you know, sustains a heavy load of these small writes, for example, that are more appropriate for one of the data structures, you know, the queues are just going to build up in terms of updating the other data structures. So the general question is really hard to deal with those updates, okay? But we're hoping, we went through a similar step in Sierra where we were saving power because of diurnal patterns. And in theory, you can't, in general, you can't really do that because you need to catch up with some previously written data. But in practice, there was enough idle time for our workload, Hotmail in that case, which allowed that to catch, which allowed us, for what we cared about, to catch up. We are trying to collect some realistic workloads that exercise all of these different data structures to see if, in fact, we can catch up for what we need.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nawan Rafiq from Google. So I'm thinking about the motivation here.
Yes.
Can we be thinking about one kind of like on this layout and one kind of in-memory implementation that will work for all different kind of data storage instead of thinking about coexisting of different structures? And should that be the thing that we are thinking about?
So you're saying is it the right approach to actually, is there one thing that we can do to like cover all these data structures?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not necessarily calling it one thing. I'm calling it n different things, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying that they are somehow coexisting, and we're identifying ways to cross layers to optimize among all three of them. So I'm not calling it one thing anymore.
Yeah, you are not. But I'm thinking maybe we should be thinking about one thing. Like, why think about all different structures to coexist in a system, and why not come up with a system that can tackle all different kind of representations?
I see. Just,
yeah.
But this might be a little bit more like a philosophical nature in that you're saying, is the fundamental approach, like maybe it's better to actually start from the idea that you have one system that supports all these things natively rather than coming from this motivation that you actually have N-way replication.
I'm not sure even something like that exists, but I'm thinking if that's something that we should be thinking about.
Do you have
are we saying we want to give up on having something that works for different data representations?
Well, so for example, we do have something concrete that works for multiple things. This big in-memory systems turn out to work well for many things. Okay, once the data is in memory, it makes, you know, there are still differences, but there are fewer differences in terms of, you know, performance between some of these different data structures. So we could build all an in-memory system, and that will actually be good for multiple things. Okay, so that's one concrete example I have you. But then you go back to some of these more traditional enterprise workloads that you find sometimes in databases, where you see that won't cut it either, because you have these things like column stores and row stores, and there it makes a big difference on how the actual data is laid out on disk, actually, right? And even in memory, it does make quite a big difference. So we're still looking. Did you have something kind of?
No, I was just putting out a question there.
Okay, fair enough.
You should try to make a system where one size fits all, and you can handle all three in the single system. It's a good goal to have. Okay, let's thank the speaker once again.